Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
Alpha Shard.
Christy.
Buzzfackle 42.
Well, this went off the rails very quickly.
It always does.
Well, I'm talking about burning things, and that definitely has association with civilization, so.
Yeah.
Or at least how I play it.
Hello, everybody. This is Fuzzy Crackle 42. I am here today on the Polycast with Mr. Madjin.
Yo! What am I doing here?
Miss Makalua.
What he said, except also, can we have more coffee?
Mr. The Mian Team.
I know what I'm doing here. We all know what I'm doing here.
Dick moves.
Easy, Mackie.
Mr. The
Not that kind.
I don't know if we know why I'm here, but...
And Mr. Alpha Shard.
Hey, let's burn all the things.
The E3 gameplay that we got for Civ Beyond Earth Rising Tides. We actually finally have gameplay video.
Yay!
Just as scripted as it always is, but it did showcase, you know, all the water-based cities and new unit types and all craziness and the aquatic life. I don't know. It just looks like they basically just turned the water into a copy of the land.
Yeah, I like the water. It looks pretty now.
Yeah, I didn't like the way it looked.
I think one of the best things about Rising Tide is that the art seems to be better, even for the stuff from the base game.
Yeah. They gave everything a color pass, they said, I think, in one of the videos.
I mean, Chris does raise kind of a good point, which is, what is the quality that's going to distinguish these aquatic cities from cities on land? The first most important thing is that apparently the cities can be moved.
I think we get a little ahead of ourselves, but I think in the interview, it was a discussion that it's in discussion whether land cities will be able to move or not.
My vote would be for no. Otherwise, you know, I don't know. I feel like that would get really complicated if all the cities could be moved.
Yeah.
I do like the idea that was displayed in the video where moving the cities is actually sort of building a building. You actually have to put production into the city in order to move it, which I thought was a good mechanism because the people aren't going to be moving their cities willy-nilly. They're only going to be doing it when really necessary or appropriate strategically to be doing so. You can't just move the city on a whim.
You're not going to use it like it's a massive aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Aww. Yeah, and I think it was based around the number of buildings in the city, so you have to do it pretty early on.
The more buildings, the slower it'll go. There's also a rudder to make it go faster.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and you can also only get culture from a water city by moving your city or buying tile.
How much does it cost to move, though? Like, could you found a complete garbage city, build, like, a rudder, and then just move it all the time?
Probably.
I guess that probably the things like rudders or other things that will make the city move faster will probably be higher or farther out in the tech tree.
Well, I was just thinking, drop a settler, you buy a rudder, and then you have a mobile aircraft carrier, and then
I knew that's what he was going for.
of course.
Yeah. In the interviews, they did say that you can settle these cities right at the start. You could just take your first settler and throw them into the ocean, it sounded like.
Yeah. But I'm trying to think of useful, cheesy moves, not necessarily...
Don't just build the rudder. Build all the defensive buildings and stuff like that, and then use it to go chase other people's cities.
Although, I would only bother the defensive buildings if it didn't slow you down too much.
Well, you can pump up the production. I mean, if it's based on production to move, you send a bunch of internal trade routes, other such stuff. All you have to do is pump up its production. You didn't say you have to pump up the production of the city itself.
That's true.
And then you use all your coastal cities to ship all your production to it.
Ah.
And now you have a mobile.
It's amazing how we can cheese the game and it's not even out yet.
It would be a lot cheaper just to build carriers.
There are real costs there. It's true.
Yeah, there's some cost to it. Like, you put all your troops to the city.
Yeah.
And other such stuff.
We'll have to see when this game comes out how well this mechanic works.
What did you guys think of the whole... It was already sort of in the game before, but now it's going to be a little bit more prevalent to leash the aliens and use them as sort of an extra unit early on in the game.
If it is a Harmony thing, then Harmony will actually feel a bit more harmonious. Also, all these stupid aliens on the map, and you're supposed to be Harmony with them. Well, maybe you can actually do that now. But, on the opposite side, it wasn't actually previously in the game. I mean, you can dig up stuff and randomly get one, but it's not like you could go to an alien nest and go, hey, little siege worm,
right,
want to play?
It was too random.
It'd be cool if they took this mechanic and actually allowed you, rather than making you build xenoswarms, you just gathered all the aliens and made xenoswarms out of it.
There you go.
Basically, yeah, depending on the aliens you get, you change the mechanics of the unit. You change whether it's ranged, melee, the strength, etc.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But probably too complicated.
Probably.
Yeah, I also like one of the things in the videos, the coral aliens that sit out in the ocean. And I don't think they move. They just grow and spread, and they spore to like a plant. And Rika on the forum was asking if a modder could make that a land thing and make a fungus so that way Mackie could have her experience.
See, when you said that was a plant and it was going to grow, I'm like, oh, it's a seafloor version of the fungus. Yay.
Yep.
You know, half yes and half no, because when you were not playing the Giants, fungus was annoying as hell.
Yeah, but it actually could be interesting if there's also a land-based side of it. If it wasn't just water and it was also land, that'd make the early game on both land and water potentially far more dangerous.
I think it also adds to the alienness of the game.
Speaking of which, primordial map.
I wasn't really thrilled by the biome differences in the original BE. I just looked at them and was like, oh yeah, it's just a different color. There's a blue, there's a green, there's a some other color.
Yeah, it does sound like the biomes are going to play a bigger role in gameplay itself.
Yeah, so which map you actually are on might actually matter. So it's not like I always play on primordial because I like the color code.
You could still do
now
that.
You could still do that, but now it sounds more like when you play on Arid, you get this mechanic. When you play on Lush, you get that mechanic, etc., etc. But yeah, I think this is kind of a response to back when BE was first coming out. And I don't know if you remember the interview with Lena Brinks, the former producer, where she was talking about, well, we tried to change some of the colors, but then we found people didn't identify with it, so we kept to the desert always being yellow, crap like that. Well, I think this might actually be a breaking away from that.
Yeah, I like that the desert's black now.
Yeah, it's like, hey, it's an alien world. Dirt doesn't have to be the exact same color.
Yeah, because we have places on Earth that have red sand and black sand, so why couldn't you have a desert of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention, some of our colder areas are desert, or would be, if they were warmer. Is it, like, no rain?
Yep.
Alien worlds should be alien.
Alien! You guys noticed the Nazca lines, circles thing that was in there, I believe?
A couple of places.
Sort of crop circle-looking things.
Mm-hmm.
Not crops,
the aliens were here.
The same things chased on Earth are here, too. Oh, God.
We are those aliens.
Like, before we get there, it's like, okay, everybody, let's just randomly draw on the map.
I thought it'd be good to actually have a bit of culture and backstory on these worlds, because that's something that the vanilla BE didn't really have. It was just like, new worlds, okay, there's nothing really interesting to look for. You're just building kind of your own culture rather than factoring the culture of the lands that you've landed on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the sheer lack of feeling in the game.
Didn't feel like it had a soul, and maybe this will change that.
Hopefully.
I like the, I forget what they called it now, the sort of the collecting of ruins.
Or artifacts.
Artifacts, that's what it was, yeah. Like the Great Works mechanic in Civ 5.
There's apparently a coffee pot artifact.
Yes.
There is?
And it was wow. It was not Mr. Coffee, though. It was Senior Caffeine.
Yeah.
Which I thought was almost a little bit too silly for a Civ game, but I'll go with it.
It is not.
I don't mind it at all. Okay. Right. Yep. It's not usually too tongue-in-cheek in Civ games in general.
But let's remind you, beep, beep,
beep,
beep.
Yep.
Exactly. What are you talking about?
It won't be long before someone mods the coffee pot to be Starbucks branded or Tim Hortons.
Yeah, and there's like dozens of artifacts, apparently.
It's kind of unlike the Civ 5's Great Works. You have, what does it look like? Variety of artifacts of, is it Old Earth, Progenitor, and Alien, and then put some of them together, it looks like. And you research them, and you get stuff.
You get bigger, more powerful things if you save them up, yeah.
It's still kind of similar to Great Works, like, into several different types of it, but of course, as it is, they're not there to have the passive bonus of tourism and culture. They're there to actually be used and spent, almost like they're the items in an RPG.
My thinking, too, is that it did seem like kind of an RPG type of mechanic.
Or as David Wignona apparently has said, similar to sets in Risk.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
If you think about it that way.
So it's your hand size. It's your hand.
I was thinking of Materia from Final Fantasy VII.
If you save up several of them, you can get a unique ability.
So just try not to trigger anyone's trap card.
It'd be interesting to see how and where you get these artifacts. And do you get, like, that many? Because, I mean, looking at the artifact overview picture on the Well Souls, obviously it's a setup, but they can do stuff. It seems like a lot of stuff, especially unused stuff.
Well, I'd love to see some of the things, like, basically just, like, explorations in general and excavating, you know, progenitor ruins. I'd love to see artifacts come out of that, replacing some of the useful things you'd get out of doing the explorations, like random aliens that you can leash them, or random teeny bits of money or whatever it was.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, some of those free affinity level, I'd still probably want
to. You may even be able to explore all the, Scott was saying, Nazca lines and things like that all over the place and find artifacts in there.
Yeah.
Basically, build more explorers.
Always build explorers.
But then the question is, are they going to be transferable? If you conquer somebody's city who happens to have some, do you get it?
I know you get the Orc's Bark in Civ 5, so I don't see why you wouldn't, unless they've been spent already and they're gone.
Yeah, it's a question of utility of the artifact system. Because obviously there's only going to be so many places to get artifacts. There's only so many exploration sites. And once you go running out there and you hit them all, is like that the end of the artifact system? You get?
Well, maybe you get artifacts from killing or commandeering alien units, too.
Destroying alien nests sort of thing.
Yeah.
They could be semi-renewable. Who knows?
Well, yeah, for the alien side of it, yeah, that could make sense if it was nest-related, along with some of the exploration sites. Because then, yeah, that is somewhat more renewable. But progenitor-wise, that's pretty much going to be exploration sites and other biome-related things. So that's definitely non-renewable. And old Earth relics, well, it's not like you tossed a bunch of coffee cups at the planet before you showed up. Like, I gotta need this later.
might get the old Earth relics during conquest. Kill others, get their stuff, and call it an artifact.
Mm.
Is it really an artifact if you kill something new?
Hey, they brought it with them. They brought it with them in their old stuff that they have set up in their original city. You kill the original city, you tear down all the stuff they brought, and be like, hey, this came from home. Sweet. We'll call it an artifact.
Yeah. There was an interview by the game watcher Alex Donaldson, who interviewed Andrew Fredrickson. There were a few good things brought up in there. One of them was about browsing all services a leader could be using, and you can actually rent those services from them. So I think that might actually add something to diplomatic relationships, at least expand it more things.
Yeah. In the one gameplay video, which I think we've sort of talked about, it actually showed the new diplomacy screen.
Yeah.
Well, not all of it, but some of it.
It was good to see the relationships between the different leaders, indicating by a color of the circle around their little portrait, I think it was.
Yeah, because I forget. Beyond Earth didn't really get to see the relationships at all. So you didn't know if this person liked that person or not.
Right.
Hey, as long as there's something you can actually spend the favors on, I don't care. Too many times I've played games and I've accumulated at least, you know, several hundred favors with someone, and as soon as they go to turn them in, you're like, yeah, I'll give you 2 gold for them.
Yep.
Like, yeah, great, thanks.
No.
Considering I had to give you, every time you wanted a favor, you wanted, like, what, 10 energy a turn or something? You think you might give me something else back in return for that?
Yeah, I guess the question is, how are they going to change the base game factions? This whole diplomacy thing, now you have diplomatic capital, and you got traits, and obviously trait system, then the base game ones are also going to change, or at least the ones that need to be changed, because some will probably be just fine.
We didn't touch on the sieve that was added that they showed off in...
I like that sieve that they added. The tin can flying out from space, and they're basically living and dying on the ship before they even get to the planet. So the people that left the planet, generation's gone, and there's an entire new generation that reaches it. And they have to fly through space using scarce resources, and it gives them a bonus to their city production or city...
Processes.
So that sounds good and interesting.
Yeah, it depends on how often you use those. In most normal games, I'd rather be building something.
Do we know if there will be other additional civs in addition to the one that they displayed?
Yes.
Or?
There's two aquatic ones. I don't know much about them, just that they're aquatic. They like being on the ocean.
Maybe Polystralium. Like.
Are they going to be like dolphins?
Yeah, they prefer the water.
And there, I that cannot enter land ever.
Giant,
you just get to the leader screen and it's like. That's my best dolphin impression. I know it's terrible.
I don't know most of the sounds Minecraft would have for.
Yeah. I think in this case it's more that they came from Earth and chose to live in the water.
Yeah.
They have no land left.
They're really thirsty.
Don't you remember? The water level rose on Earth.
I like one of the questions that was asked in the interview by Alex saying what features in this Civ would be used in when they go to more traditional Civ, and I think he's implying Civ 6 there. And Andrew had said that they're open to things, wasn't going to confirm if anything was, but that the other team would be open to things being used from one game to another, but you know, nothing confirmed.
That makes sense.
It's a cryptic response, but it's not early.
It's a generic response, though.
Yeah, but it's the only response he really could say.
Yeah.
It's like, we built something at the studio. Yes. Somebody else may take our code and use it for their own purposes.
Mega Bear Strand strategy article updated for Brave New World on the Ottomans. It has changed a bit since like the Gods and Kings and before day, where you put like a naval unit next to a barb and you had a chance to get it. And then if it didn't happen, it never would. Or yeah, no, you just basically are just like the privateer promotion now. You just roll up and own the things and you get them for naval UA, for example. So that's one change.
Well, yeah, you actually have to kill the unit. So.
But it's also like you can gift the promotions to other nations as well now because of that.
It also gives you the ability to have a huge navy, considering you only pay, you know, one third the cost for the maintenance for them.
Yeah, it's a big advantage, especially on water maps or even like continents type maps.
Yeah, you can pretty much just completely surround your continent in cheap boats that no one can get through.
One of the things that was interesting about Mega Bear's fans article was, even though the unique ability is sort of water-based, you know, the strategy for the Civ, as he sort of lays it out, is not really so much about completely water-based, like a Civ England or Portugal, as one of those Civs would be. It was sort of like, you can use the aquatic ability, but really it's more of a land-based Civ at the end of the day. At least that's how I read his article.
I don't know. I mean, he gave you highlights on how to handle both land and naval stuff and tips on how the unique units work and how you handle them if you're fighting them. Although, with the Lancer replacement, you basically deal with it the same as usual and just kill it when it's trying to defend against you. The Janissary, since they can heal and they kill your units, you do want to make sure you kill a Janissary and you don't leave weak units near it when you engage it for certain. And they hurt when they attack you, so that's something to bear in mind as well. They hurt you more than usual when they attack you. But yeah, I mean, you can use the naval stuff. If you have a land map, you can use the unique units. I think England is actually a good comparison.
Yeah,
because they murder bows are not a strictly naval advantage, and they come on a unit that's very often used offensively and defensively for a good portion of the game. So I think England is comparable in that regard. They have uniques that allow them to perform better than usual on land at a certain time period in the game, despite being otherwise mostly geared for water.
You know, one of the problems, just speaking more generally, that I have in Civ sometimes, especially with the Civs that are more sort of hybrid, like England or the Ottomans or something like that, is it's really hard to both get your naval techs going and get the sort of melee and other military techs on the bottom of the tech tree going simultaneously. And so at some point, I feel like you have to make a choice between, okay, am I going to go full-tilt naval combat, or am I going to stick to sort of the bottom and middle of the tech tree and play things more on the land?
Yeah.
See, Ottomans, you can kind of focus more on the land techs because of the ability. You've probably shipped the entire tech tree. So you can just spam triremes or pick up all the barbarian galleys and whatnot and just swarm enemy more advanced ships to capture them for yourself. So you don't really need the advanced naval technology unless you want to actually physically build them. Like, say, your navy's starting to lose its effectiveness against the enemies. You're not capturing as many as you want, so that's the time when you'd want to go for naval tech. But really, just spam out triremes.
Yeah, how do you capture ocean-going vessels? So, and someone pointed that out in the thread. it's hard to capture ships that can enter ocean tiles because you can't hit them with triremes, you can't enter ocean, and it becomes increasingly difficult to get that going if you fall too far behind on naval technology.
Maybe, you know, once they get to caravels, you might be able to snipe a couple, like, near an enemy city if they're keeping them around for defense sometimes. The AI might be able to snipe those. But at that point, then, you just grab some caravels. There you go. There you go.
Use those to get the other stuff.
Use the caravels to get the privateers and eventually the ironclads, and if you're lucky, a destroyer or two.
I guess. It just seems kind of roundabout. If you're on the kind of water map where you want that kind of navy, I feel like you could just take the techs, upgrade all the kinds of stolen ships you get, and have your much larger fleet because you have the maintenance advantage on it, and but then just go wreck people with a bigger navy that's more advanced.
If it's got a decent amount of water, yes. If it's, you know, still kind of a mix of land and water, particularly if you have to take a lot of inland cities from others that you'll need the janissaries for, you know, you might have to focus down a little bit low. And you can use your water edge to help you keep yourself up.
Yeah, okay.
To date for a little while.
It's not like a worthless bonus, for sure.
It's viable. It's a viable option. It keeps you going. It lets you have that edge from the water while you push through with the techs for the land side of the continent.
The biggest problem I have with the auto derps is, well, it's all military.
Huh?
It's like water-based military and two units that the moment they are no longer viable, when you start going into the industrial and beyond, all of a sudden what you're left with is some water-based stuff, but that's it. So kind of like you have to use them when they're useful, and then otherwise they just go back to generic.
Make a ton of aircraft carriers that less maintenance. Load up the planes on them.
They're not necessarily still generic later on. I mean, if you capture and you build a load of destroyers, considering you're paying almost nothing for them, you could be slaving around the map and just plundering trade routes everywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty generic.
You can do it a lot. You can do it a fair bit more. Like, it might be on par with how England can do it, but England can go further, but you can have far more ships doing it.
Yeah, but the moment anybody has privateers, they now have your unique ability. They can upgrade their privateers to destroyers.
Yeah, but if you destroy them, then they don't have them anymore.
you can cut
the enemies off of their privateers by destroying them.
I think in practice that doesn't matter a lot, because if you have control of the seas and you've killed their units like that, that's probably not going to change unless someone does something like nukes first, in which case the Ottoman advantage is kind of weak too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can all-in somebody when their bonuses are most relevant. But I think it's okay to have some civs like that. It's just the Ottomans are a little underwhelming. Like, they don't have that same kind of crushing advantage as the Keshek.
Well, I mean, the Janissary is pretty solid. You just have to remember not to lose it.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good, but it's not a Keshek.
This is Civ designers we're talking about. Do we really think they know what they're doing?
I mean, they could have done something different with the naval side of it. They could have gone more along the lines of like how the Ottomans ran their government historically, rather than giving triple cost reduction on naval units or whatever. They could have done that.
He does talk about don't capture every single boat that you want. That's out there just because, well, eventually you're going to overpay for it. But one thing he kind of forgets on that is if you are capturing a lot of boats and they're near your territory, you can always just swing them into your territory and sell them for gold.
Yep.
Because you do get money back if it's in your territory. So, yeah, you might have way too many and the actual maintenance cost goes up, but if you can bring them back to your territory and sell them, because if you don't need them,
I think the actual best practice there is to ally a city-state and gift them.
That in itself is a pretty good strategy. Be the Ottomans, capture as many boats as you possibly can, start feeding it to a city-state or two, because you can just drive them in and gift it, and then after they've upgraded them to the next level, steal them back.
We need a lot of boats to do that, but it would be really fun.
That's a very damn strategy for regards to bullying city-states or bullying money at city-states. At this time, it's not bullying money, it's bullying unit upgrades out of the city-states.
Yeah. Saves money.
It's a lot of hassle.
Well, by the time you forget some privateers, it's pretty easy. Just give it to them, they'll upgrade, then you hit it a couple times with your frigates and take it out. If you don't get it, well, you didn't pay for the upgrade.
Yeah.
But if not, yay, free stuff.
I like that better on slower speeds, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Annoying on quick speed or something where one turn is just so much of the game by comparison.
The game as a whole is really doesn't scale speed well.
Every Civ has scaled speed pretty poorly. I don't think there's a lot you can do about it, unfortunately.
I guess one thing to note is that when you are playing against the Ottomans, if you capture their caravel or whatever, their non-privateer, it doesn't keep the prize ship. You have to actually upgrade it to a privateer to get prize ship back. This prize ship is a Civ-level modifier for the Ottomans rather than on-ship.
Although Mega Bears fan points out if you gift or sell the unit that they keep it.
There is some weirdness in that. Like, if a Civ loses the Great Lighthouse, the Great Lighthouse promotion still exists on their boats because the game doesn't know how to remove promotions very well.
I see. So it's probably just checking it on the unit changing hands by capture, but not on sale or gift.
Yeah, probably because when it's captured, quote-unquote, you actually technically get a new one.
Yes.
You don't capture it with its actual promotions. That would be really cool. If it creates a new thing, new item, then you lose it. So what old feature would you like back for the next Civ? I guess we're back to mainline Civ and the fantasy existence of Civ 6. We Own the Purple made a post. He wants to go back to the Alpha Centauri nuke system. Basically just one nuke wrecks everything. Doesn't matter what it's there. No half population loss, blah, blah, blah. Made the nukes more high stakes, and everybody hates you if you didn't remove the prohibition on using them. And then he asks, you know, general question of, what about everybody else? What do you want back?
I know this is all, like, going to be, okay, what do you want to see? So it's strict opinion, but I don't want to see Planet Busters and Mainline Civ.
Yeah.
First, from a gameplay perspective, nukes are already strong enough relative to other military units as is. They are already devastating and have been for pretty much every Civ game ever, to the point where they can trump even more advanced technology until you get some kind of countermeasure. And even then, it's hard. They're very, very strong as is, so you don't need to see them stronger. And also, we don't have nukes that are like planet busters in reality. I mean, they're very, very powerful, but on the scale of like a 20-year advancement, complete removal of everything, including all the surrounding tiles, given what all the surrounding tiles are supposed to represent, we don't have that kind of power in one nuke, guys.
There are several things that I would like back. I like the health system in Civ 4. I like the wonders that were dependent on certain resources, like ivory for the Statue of Zeus, copper for Colossus, stuff like that. I like the Civ 2 advisors. I know that was mentioned in the list in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I definitely second that one.
And I also liked a couple world wonders from Civ 2, which was Leonardo's workshop, which gave free upgrades to your units.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no. If they gave you that back, they would nerf it so hard.
Yeah, that
can't come back.
Or you know, just modify it for something else, because I just like the sound of Leonardo's workshop. Then I also like the Sun Tzu's War Academy. I like the name of it mostly, but I think it's a barracks in every city or something like that.
Yeah.
And I also missed the corporations. I thought those were fun. I know some people feel that they were like overpowered or maybe too cheesy, but I like the idea of them. That would be nice to have them back. I like the rendered city maps that were in Civ 2 and Civ 1, where you can see all your buildings and all the world wonders that are in it. I guess you sort of have it now, but it's not quite the same as being zoomed in.
It's so overcrowded on the main map.
Yeah,
everything's shoved into a single tile, so you can't see much.
Yeah, there's no spread.
I would like to see some tweak between Civ 4 maintenance and Civ 5 happiness. I really liked the individual city feel from Civ 4 and the way it meshed with empire management. I like social policies as a concept. I see something similar to civics brought in alongside it. But specifically just that individual city management aspect, you can still tile micro in Civ 5 and you can still plan your cities, but you don't have the same degree of specialization possible and you don't have the same city level consideration because happiness is global. And that's a little confusing, first off. But aside from the confusing factor, like, you don't have individual cities getting upset. You don't have individual city health problems. And that's something that could be taken to a higher level than it has been previously, even with how trade routes are working in Civ 5. You could really mess with resource distribution in an empire and have that be an engaging system. So I would like to see some of the city-specific stuff brought back from Civ 4 and built upon using some of the concepts that Civ 5 has shown us so far.
Well, more detailed Civ. The city is the important thing in the Civ, and it shouldn't be just generically global stuff attached to it. Most of the things Scott mentioned are mentioned in the thread. Otherwise, we've got governments, so passive bonuses and changing the way your empire reacts to your actions, usual civics, health, era-specific music, and leader heads.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice touch.
Seeing me blinking at the toga in Civ 3 was always amusing.
Yes. Civ 3, 4, BE-style espionage. I don't know. I wouldn't want the Beyond Earth and Civ whatever to have the same style of everything, because then that's kind of... You're just playing the same game.
There are just some things I miss being able to do, like trading maps and having permanent alliance in Civ 4. I thought those were useful things to do, but...
Diplomacy side, yeah.
Yeah, bringing back permanent alliances and building on it would be a huge bonus, and we have talked about that on previous episodes. It would be very nice to see that back as well.
Another thing I miss is, in Civ 1, you could see your citizens, and they would have them representing the happiness level, and there would be, like, a group of unhappy or content or happy citizens or rebel citizens, and they would all dress differently. I liked that.
Yes. Pop level, like, individual citizen level religion.
Yeah.
And individual city level...
Oh, well, the city culture was, like, X percent one and X percent the other.
Yeah. Like, over the tiles.
Yeah, this dude is German, that dude is American, and this dude over here likes Buddhism, and that dude over there likes Catholicism, and that would be cool to bring that actual level of depth back in, because then you can play with lots of mechanics related to nationalists later in the game, or just religious conversion or hatred and stuff like that.
Keep in mind, Civ 5 is the closest when it comes to religious distribution, actually. Civ 4 had the culture split based on percentages in the tile of how much culture was generated there. But when it came to religion, Civ 4 was very generic compared to Civ 5 by comparison. Every religion was identical, and if you had multiple religions in a city, it just had multiple religions in a city. That was it. You could build the buildings, and, okay, maybe the Apostolic Palace would come into play or something. But for the most part, if you had an extra religion in the city, it just gave you an extra happiness and free religion and not a whole lot else.
Yeah,
really brought back. It would be cool to see, though, I agree.
Where that should be an actual conflict in the game. You have these multiple religions, there should be tension or issues or whatever.
Depending on how your nation is, how much that would be a factor, yeah.
That would probably have to come in with the civic. You have to bring back someone like civics where you basically decided, are you working on tolerance? Are you working on religious persecution? Things like that.
Yeah. And then if you tie in with the nationalists, it's like, oh, do we let the German Protestants come visit us because we're also Protestant? Or do we just hate the Germans too much?
So basically Civilization Universalis.
I wouldn't go that far.
EU doesn't even come close to that sort of thing. You get really deep into the population, and that would bring back like the civic style, and you can make choices over the years. Otherwise, one of the more important points made in the thread, barb cities.
Oh, yes. I do not mind barb cities.
Barb cities.
Because at least then you know exactly where they are and where to put the army instead of them randomly popping up that one tile you couldn't see. I mean, they can still do that, but still,
I think that might bring those that get upset at that kind of thing. Like, why are you calling them barb, this culture and their...
If they have a city, are they really barbarians?
Yeah.
They're organized barbarians. How about that?
Well, it's like organized crime, I guess. Right?
Yeah. The concept, anyways, going from people living in huts to actually controlling territory, that would be cool. Because the New World scenario in older Civs was much more amusing. The barbs actually controlled most of the lands.
You came in and there was like five or six barb cities and all that.
Yeah.
So they have to reconcile that in Civ, though.
Maybe just change the name to so minor, not that's not even a city state.
I mean, Civ 4 had something called a minor nation that the game virtually never used outside of mods. Like, I think by default they're at war with everyone, but you could make peace. It was a weird mechanic that was underused outside of world builder scenarios. And I played with it a little bit when I was still making maps in the Civ 4 strategy and tips thing. So they had something like that that would have been cool to have on, like, a Terra map. But I think there's a fundamental issue with Terra maps in Civ games, and that's just that because you start off in what's effectively a Pangaea with all the other nations, killing people in the old world is just overwhelmingly dominant every iteration of Civ.
Well, even sending a
settler. It takes too long. It takes too long for to investment in the new world to pay off, and it's even worse in Civ 5 because of the per-city penalties, but the maintenance and delay in Civ 4 made it problematic, too, because, like, you couldn't just bulb astronomy and send cities over there. You'd bankrupt, whereas if you waited for state property or, you know, other things to mitigate the maintenance, try and build Forbidden Palace over there, limit the number of cities, and it took so long to actually get use out of that that you would have been better off just conquering double the land on the original continent and winning the game.
It's never been modeled properly in Civ.
Yeah.
We have a couple points raised in chat. Star of Hope says, Endless Legend does barbarians with depth well. You can kill and then later rebuild the villages, bribe or complete a quest to make them friendly or part of your empire. Which are all things that I think would translate well into Civ.
Yeah.
There was a Civ 4 scenario where you played as the barbarians and you went out and just conquered as the barbarians.
It's part of the Warlords expansion, yeah.
Yeah, yes it was.
And you couldn't play it outside of Warlords, which is why I didn't use it a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah. While we're still talking about Civ 6 here, or the potential Civ 6, there's another thread here by Crazy Man, and he is talking about an overhaul of religion for Civ 6, and he raises a few different ideas he has here. First one, which is probably the one I like the most, basically saying that he would like to see holy wars be more of a prominent thing in regard to religion in Civ 6. Specifically that you could build some kind of special units that would raid religious pressure of other civilizations as you go forth and conquer. So he's saying they would basically double as inquisitors and purge religion from cities upon capture, which I like that idea. I think that's something that would work very well in Civ 5 too, but definitely for Civ 6 I agree there that that would be a cool mechanic.
I don't know about the specific units for us. Again, as going back to what we just had about if they bring civics back, I love religious civic where you could just basically, if you choose like religious persecution or fanaticism or something like that, you have free reign to attack enemy missionaries and prophets in your lands without diplomatic consequences or without having to forcibly declare war.
That's a really good idea because there's nothing more annoying than missionary spam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for the same thing, like, take a civic or whatever and you say, we're purge, then you don't need specifically new units, you just need holy units, holify your units, and maybe if you merge an inquisitor in with some other unit, then, yeah, when you go attack and take over other cities, you use your units to purge.
Or spread. I mean, it could be either one. You could purge the existing religion, or, you know, maybe you could be either way where you could spread the religion to your own religion if you want
to. Well, basically, if you go into that civic, your army starts carrying the holy flag rather than the
Catholic flag. I was just thinking of just beating people with Bibles, but you're way worse.
You could do that as part of it, but you could also just carry the flag and spread the word in a nice way as you're killing them rather than in a bad way when you're killing them.
A second idea, Mr. Crazy Man, is that each civ is randomly assigned a location for their holy land, and then they would get a massive faith boost if they placed a city there. Multiple civs could have the same holy land, so there would be a competition for it.
The concept behind it might be okay, but how he suggested it is wrong. I would suggest, if you found a religion, and you have a holy site or holy city, if you lose that holy city, anybody who follows the religion would then want to go get it. It would actually motivate not just the person who used to own the city, but anybody who follows that religion to go back and get it.
That's a question before.
As an alternative to having a holy land, you could also make one or more city-states holy cities, kind of like the way the religious city-states already are in Civ 5, give you more incentive to interact with a religious city-state or conquer a religious city-state, depending on what you're trying to do.
It'd be great if a religious city-state could actually make religion.
I agree. That would be cool. Maybe they would have some kind of special, unique religious tenets that you couldn't normally get, so they would be desirable.
I'd love to see, like, factoring in, like, a standard map, obviously, you know, we have the 8 cities and 16 city-states. either reduce the number of religions they could have by maybe one and have at least one of the city states is religious and founds its own religion pretty early on, if not from game start.
Yeah, see, I would like something slightly different. And it would be a religious overhaul. I'd like to see more polytheism into monotheism actually happen in-game. The main problem with it is, of course, that the time frame in the early game is such a massive thing that it's really hard to do that. But I'd like to see it really easy to make a pantheon, and that pantheons are city-based. So that city-states can have pantheons, and each of your cities, when you go to found it, would have a pantheon. And then you can build up a polytheistic religion of all the pantheons, and then you shift towards the monotheistic plan by picking one of those and trying to merge in the other ones to agree with it. And then each area could still have their own little pantheon bonus, whatever, the way that they do things, but then they would all merge in, because then you could do religions that incorporate city-states and others into the religion without going, well, I've got my religion because I'm player X, and you're not player X, so therefore you don't get the religion. And then you can do much more interesting stuff when it comes to founding religions or not, or fighting within religions, and then you could have schisms where two struggling pantheon-based groups within that religious area are fighting and decide to break apart from each other. And then you can go on to Protestant stuff later.
So your idea is sort of, it's almost like the world globally shares religious tenets, and then it kind of fractures off from sort of a central set of tenets into separate religions, rather than you picking each civ, picking a separate tenet right at the start, I think is what
you could still sort of do that, but like it would be religious areas. So like say three city states are near you, it would actually take some effort to incorporate their pantheon into yours, because the actual legitimacy of polytheistic groups and then to monotheistic is that they were considered part of the pantheon.
Right.
The pantheon had lots. So you'd actually have to legitimize the fact that their part of the pantheon was part of the overarching versus totally separate. And then you could have, in the very early game, wars over who's part of what pantheon and then build it up from there. So you could have two different cities with the exact same bonus as well, but being parts of different pantheons.
Third idea here he has is that Inquisitors can kill spies. That I'm kind of not really sure how that would work, considering the spies are not really units and the Inquisitors are, but I guess that could potentially change.
They could still,
if an Inquisitor's in the city, then you can at least say that they're both in the same city.
Right.
But again, I think that would come back to Chris's idea of, if we have civics, one of those religious civics could be Inquisitors are part of the state, and we'll go kill spies.
Mm. On a similar note, he also has the idea here that missionaries could set up camp in foreign lands and sort of broadcast religion rather than just spread at one time. They could be stationed in a city and exert pressure. I guess I could see that as kind of a cool idea.
It just sounds like a great way to get declared on.
It depends on civic.
Missionaries do that now, too. So.
Yeah, even if that's a great way to get declared war on. You have 5 missionaries coming to visit me? Nope.
I don't think so.
Think about your choice carefully.
Get your missionaries off my lawn, dang it.
Another idea here is to be able to reform your religion or switch to a atheist belief set. The civ has a really weak faith per turn. There's few holy buildings and little enforcement of the holy city's religion. Then citizens might revolt. This is kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier about more specific kind of per city personalities. So I like that idea. I don't know how if you would ever really never want your city to become non-religious if you had a religion, unless there was some kind of benefit. You know, maybe there'd be a cost and a benefit to do.
I think you were saying for a science gain or something for atheism.
It might be a little bit controversial, but
yeah.
The only real problem with having atheism, well, one,
the absence of religion.
Yeah, don't merge it with reform. Reformation was huge, but they didn't reform into atheisms. And as much as the atheists of the world would love to be portrayed in a game, we must remind you that you're literally maybe 2, if that sort of percent of the world. Most people still have faith in one form or another, and that's usually related to some form of religion. Entire society is going atheist is usually crap.
I think in the context of a Civ game, it doesn't make sense, really.
Individuals could become atheist, and states can become secular. That's fine. But
I think secularism would be a better word to use for his fifth idea, because it really doesn't conflict with anything he says following it. And it would make more sense, and maybe that's even what he was going for, and he's just using the term atheism wrongly in this context, because there are a number of reasonably secular historical states, including some of the larger ones ever, and you can create benefits for being secular versus other things, but then, of course, you don't get access to the benefits of following one of the religions. That would be a reasonable choice to represent.
Like trade your religious benefits for science benefits or something?
Yeah, although it wouldn't have to necessarily be science.
Like, no, yeah.
That's a good
point. So you trade the benefits you get of religion for other benefits, whether that's science or military or something.
Yeah, something.
Still get
economic
all the
even. Beliefs.
You'd just be giving up the founder belief. If we're talking Civ 5 style, where you have founder and enhancement.
Oh, that's true.
Because all the followers, they would still have their religion, and so they would still have their benefits based on being a follower of the religion. So you still have all that stuff.
True.
So what you would be giving up is the state-run aspect of it. So you wouldn't buy inquisitors and missionaries or get prophets.
You would have passive bonuses.
Yeah, you'd have to give up that stuff. But then, yeah, you could get other things like economic growth because you're no longer paying the church to be part of the state.
Well, I think the justification there is that you become like more of a safe haven for those who aren't following the faiths of another land. So you have an influx of people, and you're also more willing to trade with people of variant faiths. So you could make a strong case for economic side things there.
Well, on the same time, you would have also people potentially leaving your civilization if you no longer practice a certain faith, too.
That's true, but historically tolerant nations tended to have an influx of people rather than believing if they were tolerant of other faiths, because for any given faith X, there's more not faith of that X.
Yeah. There's also the fact that even if you are secularist, it's not purely beneficial because all of a sudden somebody else has your religion and they haven't gone secular, then they become the religious leaders of the faith. And then so what they do starts getting pressure on you from your own people who follow that faith. So it could be benefits to going secular, but then there could also be negatives.
Another negative could be on the espionage side. If someone puts a spy in a city that has basically the founding nation of that religion and you're secular, then maybe that spy gets a bonus. That's something Civ 4 did loosely with holy cities and their espionage model, but it could definitely be a weakness of going secular, that you're not paying attention to religious side of things. You're not as suspicious of spies from a given religion from another nation.
Yeah, there is definitely ways to do it. But yeah, you could have better diplomacy with everybody because you're not focused on the religious side.
Or more neutral.
But your people still might get upset if you go attack the civ that founded the religion that they follow anyways.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
But only for that faith, yeah. That makes sense.
And only the people of that faith. But you could start multiculturalism and all sorts of other stuff and then fall into nationalist tendencies. Like secular first.
Nothing ever goes wrong with nationalism.
No, of course not.
The last idea on here is kind of probably the most out there one, which is that if all religions are taken, you could allow the formation of cults. They don't have as good bonuses as religions and they don't spread as much, but they would grant you a little bit of an extra bonus if you were... I'm expanding on the idea. If you were projecting some amount of faith, you could still get some kind of bonus for it.
I like the idea that if all religions are taken, not just cults, say you already have all of the population converted over to somebody else's faith. How about reform? Because reformation could also turn into, I want to run it myself. So I'll take your belief system, change out the founder for my own, and then we're at least related.
I see.
Then it's a question of heathens versus heretics.
I like the idea. My only concern with that is that part of the trade-off with religions is that you have to invest in faith early to get them. And so are you investing in faith later and essentially co-opting a mostly good faith without that much investment?
Exactly. That's exactly what happened in history. Everybody always co-opted the previous stuff.
Well, sure, but from a gameplay standpoint, I have concerns about it, because then, like, it becomes meta to just not bother with faith until you're crushing people, and then you're like, oh, well, I'll just make a heresy, and it'll...
Well,
diplomatic penalties for doing it, for example.
Yeah, they'd also have to have, like, your population might hate you.
You might have unrest for a while. You might have to deal with negative happiness, similar to like ideological pressure for a while. Because if you think about it, religions were kind of like ideologies.
Yeah.
They still are almost.
So the nationalists showed up.
So, you know, religious could still have pressure on happiness. It used to be religious pressure on happiness, and then later in the game it's, you know, ideological pressure on your nation.
Yep, but that could also be that to successfully do a conversion, you have to be high-pumping out the faith.
Yeah.
So that your faith output versus the faith output of the founding civ matters.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it has happened where, you know, you could very easily bloom religion somewhat mid-game, and, you know, especially if, you know, all the other religious civs were in the game and basically took all the religions at the very beginning, you could still very easily grab a wonder or something develops that becomes religious, gives you a lot of faith, and all of a sudden you have all this influx of faith, but you don't have a choice in the benefits you're getting out of it, so you choose, you know what, I'm just gonna, all my people like this, but I want to make it my own.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the incentive for a civ to do it, all religious tenets pretty much have to have a negative of some kind, because right now they're only positives. You'd probably be more forced into reform if you had the negatives affecting you far more than the original founder, for example.
Well, yeah, it could be stuff like if the original founder picked something like, give me all your money.
If the original founder had tithe, you'd actually lose money per city following, for example, or
yeah,
you know, per person.
Exactly. Why would tithes come out of nowhere? Anyways, cool stuff that can be done with religion in the doesn't exist game. I think most people probably like the concept that religion got more detailed a little bit in Civ, but it was still super high in general. I think, again, this comes back to you can push religion down to the population level and make it cooler. The more things change, the more the city stays
the same. Is that the move on to open mic now?
Like I said, the more things change, the more the city stays the same.
Yeah?
So I was away last episode.
Are we just skipping over?
Yeah. I love this episode, Imagine Rants.
Okay, you people just...
Okay.
Yeah. What? Okay, I'm dropping the mic here. Somebody thought they would speak for me in the last episode about feedback and did an okay job, just got to the wrong conclusions. What, you don't think I would say something mean and nasty to people for feedback?
Gee. Hey.
Anyways, on the actual feedback that we are talking about, 231, the one I wasn't around, the simple juxtaposition. Rika, do you like the episode Negativity versus Realism that you guys talked about? He says it's a hard thing to balance, and the word fluff is probably what will make or break the add-on expansion. In this case, we're talking about Civvert, and I love how Civvert has caught on.
It's
becoming a thing. So like you guys had said, what we've seen so far looks cool, but doesn't actually change anything about the fundamental issues of the base game in many of the areas. Although, I think it was brought up a little bit later that diplomacy is getting changed, and that was one of the biggest problems in the game. It was also a problem in Civ 5, but he inherited it and made it worse. And up until now, it looked like a lot of building something beautiful while only fixing a tiny part of the rotten foundation. While big interviews about balance and pace changing would probably not sell very well, concerning that they didn't at least throw out some information here and there to show that they know people are worried about that and to change things. So I guess on that note, I think we all agree that actually popping out in pre-release stuff going, hey, you want to talk about this like super deep, tiny mechanic that we've made a minor change to and this is how it's going to affect the whole system? Yeah, that doesn't really sell very well with media because most of the media have no freaking clue what they would talk about. Hence why art came out first. Because, it's so fluffy, it looks cool. So once you start seeing actual gameplay footage to show stuff off, then you can start finding out about where the gameplay mechanics have moved, if at all. Gallagos mentioned something about a new diplomacy system being better, so that might actually be useful. No one knows anything concrete yet, and that's kind of what we have to keep pointing out, is that as much as we can positive or negative about the expansion, there's still, as keeps getting said, not a lot of depth of the information. So we can't get deep into whether or not it's good functional mechanics versus bad functional mechanics until we actually know more. Legalized freedom. You want to know if Phil blushed through the internet?
Hey, man, you can picture me however you want to picture me. If it helps you sleep at night, I am not opposed.
You want to imagine a giant leering troll face? Okay.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I only have two words. Leonard Nimoy.
I agree with that.
He was really good at that quote, but I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that
we can't do that. Yeah.
Well, stuff you would like to see, not something you believe is realistic.
Oh.
So.
Well, okay, if they're going to bring him back from the dead.
Yeah.
It would be bizarre,
I mean, if they can do that, screw the game.
They can always synthesize his voice, couldn't they?
Yeah, take all his recorded quotes ever and just, like, mishmash stuff.
Oh, my God.
That would be an awful taste and horrible at the same time.
I guess you'd have to get somebody else like Morgan Freeman or James Earl Jones.
Morgan Freeman.
That would
be fun.
That would be.
Yep.
Any of you guys have mentioned the best feature from a previous game, which was, of course, upgrading the throne room.
I always just disabled that because I'm an annoying person. Fuddy duddy, screw the throne room.
I liked it,
but yeah, I wouldn't mind having an option to disable it and then let other people enjoy it. That's fine.
Well, it might be nice if it actually had some kind of gameplay value. I can't say how it would, but. You know,
plus food everywhere, because I put the plant in my throne room.
Yeah.
1% food globally.
It's all diplomacy level. Hey, your throne room is ugly. I don't like you.
Right, you get a penalty with people who pick differently and a bonus with people who pick the same.
You like that kind of music? We are hatred enemies.
That rug is terrible.
What does the fox say? That you're getting nuked. That's what the fox says. Okay, I changed my mind. This would be awesome.
Yes.
Gal goes nuke.
Very nice, Mackie. Very nice.
So, this has been Polycast episode 233 with Mackie, Mackie, Mackie.
Hi, hi, hi. Bye, bye, bye.
Fuzzy, wuzzy, something.
I'm going to go take a hangover nap.
Alpha, beta, gamma.
Hello, I must be going now.
Mad, crazy. I can't think of a third word.
So bad.
And troll, rage, quit, QQ.
My spies are just passing through.
Right.
And I've been a random Irish Chris person. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
You ever tried to pick up a city on land?
It does not work very well unless it's a trailer park.
I think that'll make Harmony feel like fun.
What was that?
It'll make Harmony feel like Harmony.
It wasn't.
One at a time.
The Mega Bear Strand strategy article updated for Brave New World on the Ottomans.
Remove that.
I wondered who was going to make the kebab joke first.
Or kebab remove you, one or the other.
What the? People were actually talking in the chat. What?
Craziness.
What?
Oh, we're dropping the mic. Huh? Oh, no, wait.
What?
Oh, sorry. That's later. To mainline Civ and fantasy existence of Civ 6, otherwise known as Gal Civ 3. anyway,
did you? Were you paid to make that show?
Nope. We must remember to get paid next time. Good. Good. We've agreed. Things can be done.
There are things we could change and make this really, 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 really fun.
Yep.
But whether we'll actually do it or not.
You never know. Why are we here anymore?
Why are we here?
Why are we here?
It's time for Chris to wrap things up.
Yeah, although I can't remember what I'm supposed to do other than just say goodbye, etc. Am I supposed to do anything else?
This has been Polycast episode.
Yes, I know. But there's anything else in the intro. That was what I'm trying to forget.
Same as the intro, just in reverse.
Yeah, okay, good. Good, I'm just making sure. It's been a while.
Oh, I have to say what episode number two.
Yes, I know, episode that. I do remember that part. I did notice that part from the chat earlier. Okay.
All we need is for the intro, too.
Are we gonna have a nice bit of empty space so that Dan can actually cut this in?
Record date, July 11th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.